Well, I have that song in my head now, and it will be probably for the next day or so. Thank you for sharing that. Now, I've played some games with a lot of you before, right? We've had game nights here at the church. I've gone to some of your homes. We've played games there. How many of you like to play dominoes? Show of hands. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. I saw 19 hands. 19 different people here like to play dominoes. I bet you have at least 19 different rules by which you play dominoes. How many free trains are you allowed? Who can play on those free trains? When can you play on those free trains? When can people play on your train? When can you play on theirs? How many dominoes do you draw if you can't play on a double? Do you continue to draw until you can play, or do you just draw one? Do you keep score when you play dominoes? If you play with Ronald, you sure do. Why play if you're not going to keep score? We have rules all over in our world, in our society, don't we? We live by rules every day. Imagine if we didn't have rules. Can you imagine driving down the street if you didn't have rules? Which side would you drive on? Would you drive down the middle? Would you drive down the left? Would you drive down the right? How would you know what to do when you came to a red light or a green light? Why would we have these no turn on reds and right turn only, left turn only? Rules are important. Rules are important in our society, just for our social interaction. Here's a little experiment sometime. When you walk into an elevator, the doors open up, you walk in, what's the first thing you do after the doors close behind you? You turn around. Try not turning around sometime when you get into a crowded elevator. And just face the people that are already in there. It's an interesting sociological experiment. I've tried it before, and you get some interesting looks. You can sense the tension building up really quickly. And how about when you're having a conversation with somebody? Sonia, can you stand up? If you come up to a stranger and start talking to them, and you talk to them face-to-face like this, we're married, and she feels uncomfortable with that. Yes, we probably all know people that are close talkers, and close talkers don't usually know the value of breath mints, as I heard from Jim. We have these social rules that help us to interact with other people. There are rules all over in our society. Rules at our places of work, rules in our homes, rules on the streets, rules everywhere, including in our religion. If we look at this book, oh my goodness, there is rule after rule, command after command, law after law. And it's almost a bit stifling, or a bit overcoming, I guess I should say, all the rules that we have in this Bible. Well, today I want to kind of boil the rules down, to distill them a bit. And we're going to come up to see that really there's two main rules that all the other rules fit underneath. I want to look to see how all the rules in the Bible tend to come under the two headings of love for God and love for neighbor. So we're going to look at these two passages that were paraphrased for us from the 19th Psalm and also from Exodus 20, the Ten Commandments. And hopefully we can see just why David tells us that rules are better than gold and that rules are more fine than, or sweeter than honey. So let's begin by looking at Psalm chapter 19. If we look at Psalm chapter 19, this is the psalm that is credited to David. And chapter 19 begins by saying that the heavens are telling of the glory of God, and the firmament proclaims His handiwork. Just by looking out in the world, in God's creation, you can see that God is a wonderful God, a creative God, a God that made beautiful things like that sunrise or sunset that we had earlier when Ronald was talking. So David is giving praise and honor to this God who created all things. As we read through this psalm, we see the one that makes me scratch my head and laugh a little bit. We see in verse 6 that David is talking about the rising sun. He said, "Its rising is from the ends of the heavens, and its circuit to the end of them, and nothing is hid from its heat." So I wonder if David has ever been to Ohio in January. As he says, nothing is hid from the heat of the sun. But clearly this is David praising God for all that God has done, for all that God has created, for all that God has made. Because without these things, we ourselves would not even have life. We couldn't live without the sun that heats this earth, that provides warmth, neither could the plants and the animals that we eat. We rely upon all the good things that God has made. And David is giving praise, honor, and glory to God for creating all things. But then David kind of takes a bit of a tangent. He makes a right-hand turn. Hopefully he was permitted to make a right-hand turn there. He makes a right-hand turn here in verse 7, and he begins to talk about the law. And he says, not only that the law is good, but he says he likes the law. This is what David has to say about the law. He says, in 19 verses 7 through 9, he says, "The law of the Lord is perfect. The decrees of the Lord are sure. The precepts of the Lord are right. The commandment of the Lord is clear. The fear of the Lord is pure. The ordinances of the Lord are true and righteous altogether." So this David guy, he really seems to like the law, doesn't he? He really seems to be in love with what God has given to him, these rules that God has instilled upon his people. But I wonder, why? Why would anybody like the law? Why would anybody like rules? Growing up, I think we had a lot of rules in my family, and I didn't like them. Why did I have to be home at 8 o'clock on a school night when I was in high school? Even now as an adult, there's things that I don't like, these rules that I have to adhere to. Why do I have to have my taxes done by April 15th? Probably because if I didn't, I probably never would get them done. But why do we have to have these done by 15? Why is it that when I'm driving home on Churchville Avenue and I come to Spring Hill Road that I can't make a right-hand turn on red? Even though I know some people here do. What? If I'm on Churchville Avenue going west, I cannot make a right-hand turn on the Spring Hill. At the Texaco? You can't.
That's what you should do.
I'll turn up stone in it. I don't like these rules. Deanna, I guess, doesn't like these rules. I know other people in here that don't like rules. Rules box us in. Rules constrict us and keep us from being creative. But David here is saying he loves the law. He loves these rules. He loves the decrees, the precepts, the commandments, the fear, the ordinances of the Lord. Well, I think when we think about law, we're kind of thinking too much about, if you don't do this, the police will come and get you. They'll throw you in jail. They'll arrest you. The word that is translated in our English versions as law is the word Torah from Hebrew. And the Torah is the first five books of the Hebrew Bible, what we often call the Pentateuch, the five books of Moses, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. So when David is saying the law of the Lord is perfect, he's probably referring to these first five books of the Bible, saying these books are perfect. And they're not just law, they're also stories about God and creation and God's love and God's election of the people known as Israel. So David is saying, these books, these are wonderful, these are life-giving, these are encouraging, this is how we are to live as God's called our people. And I love this so much. Now, during our Reader's Theater, we were given a list of at least 10 laws, 10 commandments, we often call them. We find these 10 commandments in Exodus 20, also in Deuteronomy. So if you want a list of rules, if you like rules, if you're not like me and you like rules, look to these, because these are very good rules. I even like these rules. These are the foundational rules of the Jewish belief, and we as Christians have adopted them as well. I want to give a quick recap of some of these 10 commandments. So I'll recap all 10. First one, you shall have no other gods before me. Second one, you shall not make any idols. Third, you shall not take the name of the Lord in vain. The fourth, remember the Sabbath day. The fifth, honor your father and mother. The sixth, you shall not murder. Seven, you shall not commit adultery. Eight, you shall not steal. 9, you shall not bear false witness, which means essentially lie. 10, you shall not covet your neighbor's stuff. It's a long verse. These are just the same stuff. So these are the Ten Commandments. They were given to Moses on the mountain by God, chiseled into rock. These are the Ten Commandments that we as humankind ought to live by, to follow. Now, I believe that all 10 of these commandments will fit nicely into two different categories. And these aren't categories that I invented. They're not categories that I made up. But they're categories that were given to us by Jesus. When the Pharisees approached Jesus and they asked Jesus, "Jesus, what is the most important law?" Jesus says to them, "The most important law is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your mind, all your strength." Jesus goes on and gives them the second most important law as well. He says the second most important law is to love your neighbor as yourself. And then Jesus says in Matthew 24:40, that all of the law and all of the prophets hang upon these two commandments. Now when Jesus says that all of the law and all of the prophets hang upon these two commandments, he's not saying that nothing else matters. He's saying that all the other laws and all the other commandments will fit into those categories. So I want to take some time to break down the Ten Commandments. I'm seeing some looks up there. You're like, really? Let's break down the Ten Commandments and see how they fit into these two categories. We'll begin with love of God. I believe that the first three commandments fit underneath the heading of love of God. You shall have no other God before me. That makes sense. You shall not make any idols. Okay. You shall not take the name of the Lord in vain, because even the name of the Lord is holy. These three commandments are ways that we show our love of God. Now, I want to illustrate this using an example that might be familiar to some of you. It's an example that comes from NASCAR. I was challenged to see if I could use an example from NASCAR because I use too much basketball and baseball analogies. So, a NASCAR illustration for some of us today. I don't watch NASCAR. I don't know a lot about NASCAR. But I know that if you are a NASCAR fan, you have one favorite driver. How many people are NASCAR fans? By a show of hands. I see a couple of hands. So I see now Luke's awake. All right. Luke, who is your favorite NASCAR driver? Jeff Gordon. Gary, who's your favorite? Michael Waltrip. Ronald?
Jeff Gordon.
Jeff Gordon, darling. I don't even know who that is. But if you have a favorite, that means that other people are far from your favorite. As soon as I saw some people say Jeff Gordon thumbs up, I saw a thumbs down from the other side of the congregation. Now, I've never been to a race, but I'm told that when your driver goes around and comes near you in the stands, you jump up and down, you climb up on your seat, I'm going to try this, I'll keep you awake, and you wave your arm and you cheer for your favorite driver as they go by. You yell at the top of your lungs as if they could hear you over the roar of the engines, and you cheer for that person. And then what happens when your least favorite driver goes by? You boo them. You hiss. You throw things at them. That's why you don't want to sit in the front row during a NASCAR race, because you will be pelted with drinks and empty wrappers and. And if people bring fresh vegetables, I'm sure they would be flung your way as well. So this is the way NASCAR fans feel about their favorite driver. And you are only dedicated to that one driver. Everybody else you despise. So I think this is kind of the way it works with this love for God. With these first three commandments. When you love God, you have your primary allegiance is to God. And nothing else is to come between you and your relationship with God. You don't bow down and worship other idols. You don't place other gods before your God. You won't even honor the name of God so much that you worship that one God. And you are careful how you use that name. Because that name alone is so precious. Even more precious than the name Jeff Gordon or Michael Waltrip. So these are ways that we love the Lord our God. I am running behind. Oh my goodness, I'll speed it up. The second most important commandment that Jesus gives us is to love your neighbor as yourself. And this is where it gets a little bit tricky, because you're looking at number four there and say, how do you love your neighbor by observing the Sabbath day? Remember, the Sabbath day was given to the Jewish people as a gift from God. Because on the seventh day of creation, God rested. So God said all of God's people also should rest on the seventh day. And by resting on the seventh day, the people are saying, you know what, my relationship with God is more important than making an extra buck. Because essentially, you're taking off that day of work where you could be making money out in the fields. But if we look at Exodus 20 and we look at this fourth commandment, it says more than just you, yourself, take the day off. It's also saying don't exploit your employees and make them work on that day either. Exodus 20 in the fourth commandment says don't make your son or your daughter or your servant or the resident alien or those that are under your care, even your animals, work on the Sabbath day. Imagine you had a vineyard. It'd be pretty easy to say, well, hey, I'm taking off today because it's the Sabbath. But hey, you, Freddie, you get out there and you pick an extra couple bushels of grapes because you need to make up for my time off. So the Sabbath is a way that we can love our neighbor by not exploiting them and making them work to pick up the slack. Number four, I would say, actually fits under both categories of loving God and loving your neighbor. If we walk through the rest of these, honor your father and mother. Don't kill people. If you love your neighbor, you don't kill them. Don't commit adultery. Don't steal. Don't lie. Don't bear false witness. Don't steal or don't covet. These are all ways that we love our neighbor. So we have these two categories. Love God and love your neighbor. And I think when we really start to break down the commandments of God, we can see why David said that the commandments of God are more precious than gold. Why they are sweeter than honey. Now this love for neighbor, I believe, has to do with kind of leveling the playing field, making things even and equal for all of God's people. Because we as human beings tend to want to win at everything. We want to exploit other people, take advantage of them, to cheat other people for our own benefit, for our own gain. Now if we look again at NASCAR, my first thought of NASCAR is there's not a lot of rules to NASCAR, is there? You just go out and you try to see who can drive 500 miles the fastest, right? No, there are rules after rules on top of rules in NASCAR. The NASCAR cars are checked out before every race. They even go and they measure these back tail fins, the spoilers, to make sure that the angle is correct, the size is correct, to make sure that nobody's trying to get an unfair advantage. The engines have to meet certain specifications. They can't have overhead cams. They can't have fuel-injected engines. And all of this is done to kind of make sure that everybody is safe and to make sure that nobody has an unfair advantage. Now, after the race, the top five cars are checked again and one random car that finishes. Why do they do this? Why do they check them again? Make sure nobody broke the rules. Make sure nobody's cheating. Because people tend to cheat if they can. They will try to get away with things just because they think that it will help them to win. Even if it is cheating, even if it is costing somebody else, even if it is at somebody else's expense. But God tells us that we are to love our neighbors. We're not trying to cheat them in order to get ahead ourselves. We're to treat everybody equally, to love them as God loved us. So I want to tell you two different stories. The first one comes from the news this week. There is a man who is named Bernard Madoff, who is in the news a lot this week. Bernard Madoff was involved in some sort of scheme. It was said to be one of the greatest swindles ever on Wall Street. He swindled thousands of people out of billions of dollars. His estate was assessed this week, and his homes and property alone added up to $826 million. He had homes in Florida, a couple in New York, one in Paris. He had multiple vehicles. He had his private jet. He had a yacht. He had two Mercedes-Benz, and he had one Volkswagen. I'm not sure why he had a Volkswagen. I guess he had good taste in cars. I drive a Volkswagen, that's why. So this guy, how did he get all this stuff, all this money? He got it by cheating people. Was he really loving God and loving his neighbor? Was he following the commandments of the Bible? I don't think so. Now, I hope that people are gracious toward him, but I hope that people forgive him. And I hope that he can find forgiveness from God as well. But compare this story to the story of this church that I've only heard stories about. There was this church that whenever somebody needed a shovel, rather than going out and buying their own shovel, they would just go to their neighbor, who was also a part of their church. And they could borrow that shovel for free and just bring it back when they were done. If anybody in that church had financial problems and couldn't pay their bills, the people in that church would give them money. If they didn't have money to give, they would sell something that they didn't need and give that money to the other people that were in need. Now, this church was very close. The community was very tight. And there was said to be no need amongst the people once they got into the flow of things. Now, obviously, this is the story about the New Testament church, the church of Jerusalem. This is a church that practiced the commandments of God, to love God and to love your neighbor. They got together for worship, and they got together to help one another out. And this church grew by leaps and bounds. Hundreds and thousands of people came to this church because they wanted to be a part of a community that was truly living out the commandments to love God and to love neighbor. So I need to wrap this up this morning. We're getting a little long. But as I look at this sport of NASCAR, I know that nobody would ever sell out on their favorite driver. You support one driver, just as this early church loved one guy. In NASCAR, they have a lot of rules to kind of even the playing field, to make sure that nobody is cheating, to take care of one another. This is a lot the way that the early church was as well. They looked out for one another. They followed God's commandments to love one another. I'm hoping that we can learn from the early church and continue to be the people that God has called us to be. And I'm encouraged by the story that Garland shared with us earlier about how this church had responded to their need. How people washed dishes for 5 hours and cared for their children when there was this time of need. I'm encouraged by hearing these stories, and I'm glad to say that I'm a part of this church. As we close today, I just ask you to turn to the back of your bulletin to read with me the confessing and reconciling section. This will be our closing prayer for this morning. And then Lowell will lead us in a closing hymn. Together. Lord our God, many times we cannot see your beauty, celebrate your love, or hear your voice, all because we are not rooted in your message. Open our eyes, enlighten our hearts, and fill our ears with your tender promises. We ask this in Jesus, the eternal word. Amen.